The 16th century was a difficult time for the Catholic Church, especially the 1550s and the 1560s, although even before that there were some quite grave challenges. By the 1550s and 60s, you're getting close to the conclusion of the Council of Trent, but the damage of the Protestant revolt is widespread and deep. Pius IV, who was reigning towards the end of the 1550s and early 60s, he took a real lenient attitude towards the faith. So there were many heretics all over Europe, and many of them wore red, meaning they were scarlet cardinals. And he was very indulgent to errant views. Although he was the one who helped bring the Council of Trent to a conclusion, which of course was the Catholic response to the Protestant revolts. And although it took a while, it was thorough and it was clear. And then in 1566, Pius IV died, and the Dominican, Michael Ghislieri, was elected as Pius V, now known to history as Saint Pius V. And so his previous job was as the Grand Inquisitor. That was the job in the Roman Curia where you helped correct people who were heretics. When he ascended to the throne of Peter, he recognized it was of key importance that the faith must be defended. And it has to be defended by teaching it clearly. And so some of you who grew up on the Baltimore Catechism, the roots of that come from what's called the Roman Catechism, or the Catechism of the Council of Trent. So that was one of the areas he had to take on. And then, of course, there was another threat to not just the Catholic Church, but to all of Europe. And that was the Ottoman Empire. At the time, they were pushing ever farther west, coming right up the Mediterranean Sea, conquering some places that had never been conquered by anyone since they became Christian. And then they arrived at Lepanto. And the Pope knew this battle was coming, and Lepanto is it's not too far from Italy, and he knew that if they won that battle, if the Muslims won that battle, they would then come into Italy and begin to overrun the whole of Europe. So he wrote to all of the Catholic princes in Europe and got a paltry response. The King of Spain, the Doge of Venice, and the Genovese leaders. Just two small duchies, if you will, and one kingdom. And so, under Don Juan of Austria, out they went to meet the Muslims at the Battle of Lepanto. The anniversary of that battle was yesterday. But that wasn't the only thing that Pius V did. He also sent out a note to all of Europe, to all of the Catholics, and he said, "Get down on your knees and pray the rosary for the victory of this battle. Our whole way of life is at stake." And the people did, and so did the Pope. And on October 7th of 1571, the Christians won what would be considered an against all odds battle. But one of the things that the Muslims didn't take into account, even though they had a superior navy to anyone at that time, was that they also had 15 or 20,000 Christian slaves doing the rowing. And so you can bet when they could see, if they could see at all, they knew who they were fighting. And with their very lives at stake, because of course if they weren't doing what you were supposed to, there was no trial, there was just execution. And they aided their Christian brothers in that battle. And that feast day was originally called Our Lady of Victory. And then I think it was Clement VII who changed it to Our Lady of the Rosary. And while I love the title Our Lady of Victory, I think calling it Our Lady of the Rosary reminds us of the power of the Holy Rosary. When we pray the rosary, John Paul II said in 2002, it's like meditating on the gospel while holding the hand of the Lord's mother. We go through those mysteries. He, of course, added the luminous mysteries. So we go through all of the life of Christ when we pray the rosary. And every time Our Lady has appeared in modern times and the church has approved the apparition, she always says, pray the rosary every day. She doesn't say, try to pray the rosary. She doesn't say it's a nice thing to pray the rosary. She says, pray the rosary every day. And in a real way, that response in 1571, it was necessary to have a navy. They needed to enter that battle if they were going to save Europe. But it was just as necessary for people to pray and to fast that their army would, that their navy would have the victory. And over here, over by St. Joseph's altar, you can see for our stewardship renewal, the poster we have, the theme is My Faith Response. And in the bulletin, I've written about the beginnings of thinking about that in terms of stewardship. But I think we have to also look at that in terms of the world we live in today. We live in a time of confusion, which of course is always sown by the devil. And the confusion is not just outside of us, although there's plenty of it outside of us. Many people who follow the church have asked this week, what's going on with this synod? There's a synod in Rome, which is supposed to be a meeting of bishops, but this year it's a meeting of all sorts of people. And some of the people going have been talking about how they want to change church teaching. They want to allow women to be priests, and they want to get rid of the ban on contraception and all sorts of other things. And all I can tell you is, even if they said any of those things, it will not be true. Catholic faith and morality are not up to a vote. The faith is divinely given. Not even the Pope himself can change the faith. He can help us have a deeper understanding of it, but he cannot change it. Neither can they change morality. And we have to remind ourselves of that, because the temptation is to wring our hands or pull out our hair or gossip, and none of that helps. And so when we look at the confusion in the church, and we look at the confusion in the world, and we look at the attacks on the church, because the church still has enemies, just Thursday morning, as the bishop is preparing to have the Mass for Life on yesterday morning, the abortion clinic pulled a last-minute maneuver so that it had to be canceled. So we have to accept that we have enemies, and then we have to ask, what is my response going to be? And I propose to you that our faith response is the right response, to grab the rosary beads, either individually or as a family, and kneel down and implore the Mother of God to help us. And how do we do that? St. Paul, this is one of my favorite readings from St. Paul. Have no anxiety at all, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, make your requests known to God. In the gospel, the greatest act of prayer, the greatest number of prayers, is petition. Lord, please give us this. Heal my daughter. Come here and do this, do that, which is fine. Obviously, it's in the scriptures. But one of the things that we so often forget is the last thing that St. Paul says in that list, with thanksgiving. We have to have gratitude. Because otherwise, all we are like children in a candy store that want what we want. But if we're going to allow the grace of the Lord into our hearts so that we can listen to what St. Paul says and have no anxiety, but by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, make our requests known to God, then we have to have gratitude. That has to be part of a faith response in everything, including the confusing times that we live in. And then finally, there's a great exhortation from St. Paul that we need now as much as ever. It's so easy to think about the things that are awful, the things that are ugly, the things that tear down and destroy families and communities. And it's not that we don't have to confront those problems, but we don't want those thoughts to dominate our minds. And so St. Paul says, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Part of our faith response has to be all of these beautiful things in our mind. We have to meditate on the Word made flesh. We have to meditate on the preaching to the 5,000 and the feeding of the 5,000. And we have to meditate on the crucifixion and the resurrection and anything else that is good, not just in the life of the Lord, although that's important, but today. We have to fill our mind with good things, with holy things, with beautiful things. Because if we don't, it will be that much harder to have a faith-filled response where we get down on our knees and implore the Mother of God that she will help us not to be overcome by anxiety, but that she will hear our prayers and hear our gratitude and grant the very thing we ask for, which is peace, which is faith, which is hope, and which is charity. And finally, part of that faith response is all dependent upon charity. If you want to know how to convert the world, all we have to do, I've mentioned this before, is look back to the second and the third and the fourth century, when the Christians, by their charity, converted the pagan Roman Empire and were just as pagan as the Romans. And so our response should be faith, hope, and charity, with thanksgiving, imploring the Mother of God for a great victory, not a naval victory as they needed in 1571, but a victory of the truth and of charity. And when we do that, we're preparing ourselves and the world for the grace of Christ and for the kingdom that never ends.